Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to another episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. This is going to be our all-star break edition of the podcast where we go back and look at where we are at the basically around the 50-game mark for the Pacific Division, a little bit less for the rest of the league, and I think that'll be caught up once we get all the bye weeks taken care of. Chris, good day to you, sir. How are you today?
I'm doing good, and I want to start off with a big thanks to Dan Harrington, who filled in for me on Wednesday. Work has been, I won't bore anyone with the details, but it's been, on my end, very chaotic and unpredictable in terms of day-to-day. So I was, thank you, Dan, and I was able to listen to the show Friday morning, and no surprise, you guys were great. So I want to start off with a big thanks to Dan. So
Dan did a great job.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, Dan did a great job. For those of you who missed it on Wednesday, follow Dan on Twitter at Dan Harrigan, H-E-R-R-E-J-O-N. He's the writes for the Lightning Insider, and if you're a Tampa Bay guy, he's got great content for you over there. So make sure everybody follows Dan. He did a great job for us, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, so we hit the break, and you know Vegas is occupying our second wild card spot. They're 1-1-1 under Pete DeBoer. They're at 57 points with 52 games played. I guess if you're a glass half full guy, Vegas is actually only 1 point out of first place. Now, granted, Vancouver has 3 games in hand, and Edmonton and Calgary. Edmonton also has 3 games in hand. At 57, and Calgary has 2 games in hand. And then you got Arizona also at 57. They have 1 game in hand on Vegas. If you're a glass half empty guy, then you're like, well, wait a minute, we're the second wild card. Winnipeg's only 3 points behind us with a game in hand. And while Chicago, Minnesota don't scare me, and even though they're 6 points behind us, believe it or not, Nashville has 5 games in hand on us, so that's a little scary. So that's where the Knights find themselves right now, heading into the All-Star break.
Yeah, and I prefer to be the glass half full guy. Like you said, the Pacific Division is a logjam right now. You're one point out of first. There's no reason to panic. The league's not, the division's not running away. I don't think this team's going to. I mean, let's be honest. Is this team going to win the Stanley Cup this year? As currently constituted, probably not. I don't think their defense has been playing well enough in front of Fleury to make that kind of a statement. Is this a very good team? Yes. Is this a team that can certainly go on and win the Pacific Division and maybe win the first round, get out of their division and into the second round? Sure, I think that's a realistic expectation of where this team is with the current constitution of the defensive core. When we said at the start of the season that Holden, Merrill, and Hague, or any of the rookies they could have chosen to take that rookie spot that was available, whether it Bischoff or Whitecloud or any of the guys down there. Hague's won the job, and he's certainly been playing better as of late, but still you have a rookie and a couple 6/7 defensemen in Holden and Merrill, and I think Fleury's been the benefactor or the recipient of some tough chances against so far this season. If they make the change that we've talked about and bring in a Sammy Vaughton in or a couple other defensemen that can lend a hand in the defensive core, then I have to reassess where I'm at. But realistically, if you look at the Central Division, Chris, you have St. Louis, obviously the class of the West, 6 points clear on Colorado, who has shown themselves able to whack the Vegas Golden Knights the couple times they've played so far this year. Old friend Pierre-Edouard Belmar scoring early and often in those games. I think either one of those teams, if they got to the Western Conference Final, would handle the Vegas Golden Knights the way they're currently constituted right now. I guess there's still a lot that remains to be seen with how Coach DeBoer is going to deploy his troops, if you will. He has made a change, and I don't know if you noticed, Chris. I talked with Dan a little bit about it, too. It's, you know, the San Jose's penalty kill has been very good for a long time, and that's one thing that we've already seen the effects of Coach DeBoer in the Boston game, changing what Vegas does on their penalty kill. It'll be sort of, I mean, it looks a lot like San Jose's penalty kill, where they stand up one guy kind of in front of the blue line to pressure which side of the puck or which side of the ice the puck is trying to gain zone entry on. And it's an aggressive pressure the puck style as opposed to more of a passive box inside the dots, so to speak. And they had been awful on the penalty kill. And this is coming from the Golden Knights broadcast team. Some of the stats. They're dead last in the league over the last 3 weeks on the penalty kill. They've went from, I think they were 9 down to like 22 ranked on the penalty kill. And they had allowed a power play goal against in the last 7 games. So holding Boston either 0 for 4 or 1 for 5, I forget which one it was, but holding them off of the score sheet for the most part in that Boston game kept them in it until Boston was able to come back with 2 third period goals and win a close game there in Boston. So we've already seen a little bit of the Coach DeBoer effect, and if they can clean up that penalty kill, that's a plus, that's a bonus. I think everybody in Golden Knights land will certainly agree with that.
I think you brought up a good indirect point, and that is, you know, if Vegas can finish anywhere in the top 3 of the division, their road to the Western Conference Finals is through the division. And even, you know, if you're the biggest skeptic of the team, if you're being realistic right now, everyone currently constituted the way everyone is playing, Vegas matching up in a playoff series against Arizona, Calgary, Edmonton, or Vancouver, you know, I would say is a pretty, you know, maybe you like one team a little bit more than the other, but let's call it close to a 50-50 series. So,
sure.
You know, finishing 1, 2, and 3, being in the Pacific, you could easily see this team getting to the conference final. How about these teams? I'm not trying to poo-poo these teams. These teams are, they're good at this point, not great. All have their strengths and weaknesses. You know, clearly I would say the strength right now in the West, if one would be St. Louis and Colorado, as you mentioned. So that to me is the game, is where you is the end game. I ideally love to get at least a second to get home ice in round one, but, you know, if 4 for today, if I was 4 for Vegas, finishing third in division, I would sign for that.
Yeah, no question about it. The team I would worry about most, and it's just a matchup thing, is Edmonton. Edmonton seems to have Vegas Golden Knights number. That when obviously here's a shocker, Chris. When they can hold Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl off the score sheet, they fare pretty well.
Yeah, they have that guy.
But you know, when they can't, Edmonton's been pretty good against the Vegas Golden Knights. So if in a 7-game series, I would lean more towards Marc-Andre Fleury in that matchup. And
right,
but
sure.
but the rest of it, I Edmonton would be the team that I, out of the Pacific at least, that I think the Golden Knights would match up the worst against. Arizona and Vancouver, both would be making their first trips back to the playoffs in quite a while. Obviously, Arizona since 2012, they reached the Western Conference Final, and obviously a completely different team. And then Vancouver, a very young squad that doesn't have that playoff experience that Vegas does on going on a deep run. And I would favor the Golden Knights in that matchup. Calgary's recently been in the playoffs. They're a dangerous team. But out of the Pacific Division, I think Edmonton would be the team that I would be worried about. But, I mean, let's face it, they're on pace to win their second Pacific Division championship in the 3 years of their existence. If that were to come to pass, I would like their chances to at least move into the second round. And that's where I think this team is. Like I said, if they can make an upgrade in their defensive core, and I mean, we don't know the William Karlsson story. Very odd the way he played the last game. And then Coach DeBoer signs up and we get the announcement that William Karlsson's week to week on the injury front. So we don't know when or where Karlsson is and, you know, when he's due back. Cody Glass working on the bone bruise in the knee. It's supposed to be close. So it'll be interesting to see once Coach DeBoer has a healthy contingent of forwards, how he chooses to line up all the centers on the roster and who the wingers are and if they're going to bring up Zekov, Perry, or somebody else from the AHL and how that lineup is still shaking out. We don't know what that's going to be. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, this is a critical time, you know, for Vegas from the standpoint of, obviously, the recent coaching change. You know, they haven't been playing great over the last, 10 to 12 games. They come out of the break going on the second half of that, however you want to say it, if it's 2-4 game road trips. And, you know, this one, the last one, this one's much tougher. They're going to Carolina, Nashville, and I just mentioned before about Nashville, about being not that far behind them with 5 games in hand. And then Tampa, who's red hot, and Florida, who's playing well. So that's, to me, that this is a very critical time. You know, and again, when I say that, I'm not saying the team needs to go 4-0 on the trip. Kind of, they can go hold order, go 2-2, hold steady, come home. But, those are tough games. And obviously, you don't want to go – it's very easy to lose these games. So you don't want to have things go spiraling, if you will, in a bad way and kind of limp home, the new coach and all those questions and – you know, slip a little further back from the division and have these other teams nipping at their heels for the wild card. So this is a very, very important time in the regular season in terms of riding the ship for themselves.
Well, if they come back, they just did the 1-2-1 thing. If they come back 1-2-1 again for a 2-4-2 8-game trip, 4 possible points out of 16, or what is that? 6 possible points out of 16?
Not awful.
Not good at all. That's not
what
they're looking for. Especially with the easiest portion of that trip behind them and looking at a 1-2-1 record on the first 4 games, you have to make some kind of a push. We assume Coach DeBoer is going to be putting in his schemes and structures that he wants to use going forward in this bye week that's coming up after this All-Star weekend for the Golden Knights. We won't see them again until Saturday night. I look for them to at least have some sort of change on their power play. San Jose's power play has also been very good, and at times the Vegas Golden Knights power play has been inconsistent. So if he can make improvements to the special teams and get some consistency out of that defensive core before, get some in place where this road trip they're going to be competitive on, that's going to be hopefully a launching pad into the second half of the season. If it doesn't work, then I think, how can I put this? I think Mitch Foley would have to look seriously at the front office and have some real serious conversations after the season.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I think it is. But, obviously by them making this change, I think he's committed to them at the same token. I think they need, like you've mentioned, and we'll get into it at the end of the show, and I'll go quickly through the sellers as of today, and it's a thin list for defensemen, but I think they need to find a defenseman, a veteran defenseman to kind of help this team. So things are very, very tight. Like we mentioned, you got Winnipeg 3 points behind them with game in hand for the wild card. The Blackhawks, same thing. Minnesota is, they're 5 points back, but with two games in hand. And then I mentioned Nashville, 6 points back with five games in hand. So, I think last year around Thanksgiving-ish, we talked about that critical time where the Knights had that five-game stretch of something crazy, like 7 days. I want to say they went 4-1 with it, and they kind of righted the ship from there. This is, in my opinion, their critical time right now.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And then we talked about second round would be a good season so far for this team as constituted, that they're probably not a Stanley Cup championship contender right now. And we listed the two teams in the West, but then when you look at the East, go ahead.
You know what though? The thing is, if they can get in that top three, and I can see, again, not saying that they're the favorite, but I'm not saying they're the underdog. I mean, it's not inconceivable. I could see them winning a couple of close series, and all of a sudden you're in the conference finals. And then, you're going to probably be playing either St. Louis, Colorado, or Dallas. But whoever is left standing could have went through two wars to get there. So, the positioning, for lack of a better term, or their path, who knows? And then as time goes on, you get confidence or whatever. So I think because the path potentially that they could have, this still could be at least a deep playoff run, Again, having said that, I mean, they could easily lose to any of those teams.
Yeah, and then...
That's how the league is. But I'm just saying, I don't see why they can't. Like I said, even if I'm the biggest critic of them, I think those are all kind of 50-50 series.
And then, when you look to the who might they match up with in the East, and you see Boston and Tampa and Washington, right. And maybe that's what I mean by a championship. They could very easily squeak through the Western Conference Final in a tight series and be looking at Washington again, or Boston, or even Tampa. Pittsburgh has been on fire a little bit lately.
A lot of it lately.
So maybe, hey, there's nothing wrong with being a team that plays, wins a first round playoff series, possibly wins a second round series or loses a tough series in the second round, you go into the offseason, you shouldn't feel bad about yourself. You should look at the roster and maybe upgrade, a tweak here, bring in somebody there. And, year three of the franchise to for the fan base, and I've seen a lot of this on Twitter, to think that where they are right now is some horrible disaster and the sky is falling. Get some perspective, man. Not you, but just in general. You know what I mean? It's nothing wrong. Ask Arizona fans how it feels not to go to the playoffs as an established franchise for 7 years. Ask the New York Islanders. Ask Florida Panthers fans what it feels like not to go to the playoffs for 20 years. This team is built. This team's built to win, but we still need to get perspective on. And I, we talked about the coaching change being a panic move. I didn't see any reason to be panicked about anything. If you get long term, big picture here, what's the phrase? They're playing 3D chess. This franchise has been wildly successful, and if they go to the second round this year, win the Pacific Division, there's two Pacific Division championships in 3 years, and get bounced in the second round, that's a wildly successful first 3 years. There's nothing to be upset about. Sure. I mean, we got to have some perspective out here.
I think part of it, they're what's the expression? They're victims of their own early success.
I agree.
You know, so much good has come so quickly.
And it seemed easy.
I think, and this is fodder for another day, but in terms of down the line, in terms of, you know, how can we make the team better in the offseason, I'm just throwing the thought out there. You know, they've signed a lot of guys to big cap numbers and to quite a bit of an extension. So they're not going to have the most fluid roster. They don't have the most fluid roster when it comes to changes. So just, you know, something to, you know, keep in mind. But again, that's talk for another day. Let's see them come out of the All-Star break, how they play and what they do between now and the trade deadline in terms of improving. And then I guess just to wrap up the West, because indirectly you mentioned all the other teams, you know, to me it looks like, you know, I guess Nashville, I could see them going on a run and challenging maybe Dallas for that third automatic spot in the division. But to me, the divisions between St. Louis and Colorado, with St. Louis having a bit of an, obviously, a six-point lead, and then Dallas 10 points behind St. Louis, I see. It looks to me the way those teams are currently constituted, and I'm sure all three are going to try to do an ad between now and the deadline. They're going to finish, 1-2, 1-2, and 3 in the Central.
Yeah. I don't see anything wrong. I don't see anything wrong with that. I think that Central, like you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, that that Central Division playoff round is, they, whoever gets to the conference final out of that Central is going to have a what I would think is a tougher path to the conference final than anybody coming out of that Pacific Division bracket. And so in that case, that's also going to be a kind of a murderer's row, if you will, of teams looking to advance there too.
And then in terms of the teams on the outside currently looking in, sneaking up into the wild card spot, the two teams I have my eyes on is Winnipeg and Nashville. In terms of, I don't believe in Chicago. I think they performed better than expected, but I don't believe in Chicago. I don't believe in Minnesota, but I think Nashville, with the games in hand, maybe they're starting to right the ship a little bit. And Winnipeg, I think those are the two teams to watch in terms of, you know, currently on the outside, who can get into one of the playoff spots and knock somebody else out.
And you know what would be kind of weird, and it really hasn't been talked about much lately, is the Dustin Byfuglien situation in Winnipeg. If that somehow gets resolved and he either becomes available or returns to the team, it'll be interesting to see how that could be a good catalyst to get a player like Big Buff back for Winnipeg. And I agree with you. Good for Chicago. They seem to be on the right path heading back to respectability. And I'm down on Minnesota. That's very... I mean, it's an old roster. They're competitive.
Yep.
There's not a lot of skill, really. I mean, high-end skill with that group. They have to do it with grit and competitiveness, and that takes you so far. But I don't think Minnesota has it either. I agree with you on the Nashville-Winnipeg forecast there for the wild card.
And think about this in terms of Winnipeg. They have lost since last season 3/4 of their top 4D. I mean, they trade Trouba due to his situation, and they want to lose him after this year for nothing because he didn't want to resign. They lose, so they trade Trouba to the Rangers.
Scandella,
right? They lose Tyler Myers to free agency, and then the whole Byfuglien situation. So, you know, in years past, you would say, well, you know, Winnipeg, 64 points. But consider, you know, take any team where they get that kind of hole blown into their defensive corpse and their top half of their defense, that's going to have a huge impact. So, kudos to them in terms of kind of hanging in there. Now they need to do something about it. Getting Buffalo back would go a long way. I'll be curious to see if they would be willing to buy it all, given where they're at as well.
Yeah, that's I've been just thinking in the back of my head about Buff for a while, you don't hear much about it right now, so it'll be interesting to see how that shapes up.
And then we go to the East. Let's start with the Atlantic because it's a little less complicated. And that is, I think it's clear that Boston and Tampa are going to finish 1-2 in the Atlantic.
Not that clear.
Boston.
Coach Quinville has the Panthers 1 point behind Tampa.
Yeah, I know, but Tampa is trading, but the arrow is pointing very much up north. And Tampa does have three games in hand on Boston. They are 8 points behind them, but they do have three games in hand on Boston. I feel that way. I feel that Boston and Tampa. So then to me, it's going to come down to that last spot in the last automatic spot in the Atlantic, in my opinion, is going to come down to Florida and Toronto. And Florida currently has a 4 point lead, games even at 49. Toronto has all sorts of injuries on their defense, which is not good considering the even fully healthy. You know, they have issues on their defense. So they're currently, Muzzin, I think, is on the road to getting back. They're going to be out without Morgan Riley, I think, through the month of February at least.
Right.
It's a tricky time for Toronto. They're up against the cap, so making a trade at almost dollar for dollars kind of situation. Florida, they can score, but can they defend well enough? That's going to be an interesting race. And, to me, that's what it's going to come down to, those two teams fighting for that last spot in the Atlantic.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't.
Because after that, you have in the division, you have Buffalo and Montreal at 51.
So that's not coming.
both of those teams are kind of fading.
Yeah.
So I don't see either one putting a run together. I like I said, I really think it's going to be between Florida and Toronto.
No, I agree with that. I think we talked in the past about Coach Quinville's effect and what he's going to have to do to turn the Florida Panthers around. And it wasn't going to happen in the first month or two of the season. We've talked before, and I said it on Wednesday talking with Dan. Since they fired Coach Gallant, this team, something was missing. I don't know what it was, but there was an it factor with Florida where I always thought they should be playing better than the results they were getting. And it was going to take Coach Q a while to change that culture of whatever needed to be changed. And now that he's been doing that, Florida's trending up too. And there's a lot of skill in that forward core. And obviously having Bobrovsky in net is a big upgrade. And don't sleep on Florida coming up Tampa's backside there. I like what I'm seeing right now out of Florida.
One side note about Toronto, remember, they traded late June their first-round pick to Carolina to get rid of Marlowe's cap hit.
Right.
Now, it is top three protected, but if they want to, you could say, well, if they want to miss in the playoffs and do a reboot, well, at least they get, a strong pick out of it. Unless somehow they landed in the lottery, if they were, that pick is heading to Carolina, so they don't even get the consolation prize if they miss the playoffs, most likely, of that first-round pick. And we've had guests on, like Russ Cohen, talking about how good this year's draft is. So just throw that. So there would be like a double whammy, if you will. Of course, that goes out the window if they somehow won the lottery, which would be unlikely because they'll probably, if they miss the playoffs, wind up with like the 13th, 14, 15 ping pong ball.
Right.
So there you're talking about a very low percentage of going from there into the top three. But then we get to the Metro, and this is all this is a good stat that we all you need to know about the Metro. Okay. In the West, the Western Conference, there are two teams with 60 or more points, St. Louis and Colorado. In the Metro Division, there are six teams with 60 or more points. And what here's even scarier. Here's another scary stat about that. You might say, all right, well, they have, you know, it's a deep division, and, you know, teams 7 and 8 are just like the level of what the Red Wings are playing. So every time these teams play the team 7 and 8, it's an automatic 2 points. Not the case at all. The Rangers, who are, you know, who if they were in the Western Conference, would be very much in the thick of things. They're at 50 points, so they're respectable. And the Devils, while not great, they're not awful at 41 points. So it's not like the last two teams in the division are god-awful. And right now, Philly, who at 60 points, who if they were in the Pacific Division, would be in first place, is on the outside looking in. They're the team currently outside of the bubble. And just to give you one last point of how cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs the Metro is, the Isles, my Isles, are 4 points behind the second-place Penguins with a game in hand. So you're like, all right, that's not bad. But the Penguins, who are on the outside, who are trying to get in, are just 3 points behind the Isles. Now, granted, the Islanders have a game in hand, but still, they're just 3 points behind them. I mean, it is really from Team 2, which is currently Pittsburgh at 67, to Team 6, which is Philly at 60. I mean, anything can happen in any order. All we know for sure about the Metro is it's hard to see the Capitals not winning the division.
Yeah, then that's pretty much all that we know for sure, barring injuries or whatever. But Washington's been playing great. They have the best record overall, right? Points-wise, 71 points for Washington right now.
Yeah, 71, yep.
Boy, if we get a Washington-Boston Eastern Conference Final, how much fun is that going to be?
Or Washington-Tampa. Yeah, I mean, right now I think those are the three, you know, they're the three big horses you have to consider in the East. Don't get me wrong, any of these other teams could win a series against Boston, Tampa, or Washington, but they would be, you know, they would be the underdog. I mean, they would be, you know, a 25-30% underdog, a 1-4, 1-3 chance to win the series kind of team. That's just in my own head. That's not, you know,
right.
Any odds or anything. That's just in my own head. And they could give those teams all they could handle, but clearly those are the three favorites, you know, in the East right now. And it'll be curious to see what all those other teams, you know, try to do between now and the deadline, you know, to improve. We know Pittsburgh's always aggressive. You know, Lou Lamoureux's aggressive, although last year he didn't do anything after not being able to get Stone or Duchesne. We saw how aggressive Columbus was. Will they do that again when they've traded away a lot of draft picks already? Carolina had a lot of success last year. So, you know, in terms of, will they, you know, add a piece, and then Philly, you know, so there's a lot of moving parts there and a lot of good teams. So it's going to be a fascinating race.
Well, since we're right there next to them, what's your ceiling for your Islanders this year? What do you think?
I think they need to be aggressive. I just wrote an article about this, post Monday morning. I think they need to add a forward, either a center, like a Pajot, or a scoring winger, like a Kyle Palmieri. They've just gone through a rough stretch from a scheduling standpoint, as well as, you know, all teams go through this. You go through stretches where everything goes right, right? And what I mean by that, you know, is you're doing a lot of good things, but when you make mistakes, you know, the other team, like, misses the net or hits the post or things kind of break your way kind of thing. And when things are not going well, you could do everything right and you're the one hitting the iron or some kind of crazy great save.
Absolutely.
And so when you make a mistake, it winds up in the back of your net. They just went through a crazy stretch where I think they played 6 games in 8 days or something insane. They got through it. They won the game against the Rangers to finish up before the break. You know, they're definitely a high-quality team, a team that could give all these other teams all that they can handle. They've shown that in their games against them. But in a 7-game series against, you know, and I kind of look at it, if they were to play any of those other teams, the kind of all coin flip series. But, you know, in terms of big picture trying to make a run, they're going to need to add a high-quality forward, such as a Kyle Palmieri or a Pageau kind of player, you know, before the deadline. I think they're a forward short.
That's fair.
Yeah, in turn. But, you know, so we'll see. We'll have to see. And then that's a good jumping-off point. When we get to the Sellers, and, you know, I've come up with, and we've talked about it a little bit, but just to give everyone a little quick rundown. These, to me, are the Sellers, who the Sellers will be come middle of February, late February, or even early February. You know, Buffalo, Frolik, Sherry, and Vezzi, Vizi, all pending unrestricted free agents. You know, I've always liked Connor Sherry. He's a in-your-face bottom six guy. You know, Montreal, you know, Nick Thompson, Marco Scandella, you know, again, kind of role players at the bottom of your roster. The Rangers with Chris Kreider, that will be very sought after. I could see a team like Boston or St. Louis or Colorado making a big pitch for him, maybe even Dallas. And the Rangers should fetch a first-round pick plus for him. I would think they would try to sign Jesper Fast, but if they can't, he would be in play as well as the pending UFA. I don't know if we mentioned Pageau, but they also have some other guys that could help teams in Nemstikov, Ron Hainsey, the ageless Ron Hainsey, and Dylan DeMilo. Jersey, we've talked about that in a lot. I also have Wayne Simmons, although he would be more of a bottom six guy. Detroit, Mike Green, does he have anything left? I don't know. San Jose, if they don't get going, Brendan Dillon's a guy they could move. Anaheim, while they're rebuilding, they don't really have anything in the terms of UFAs. And then your Kings, Toffoli, Trevor Lewis, Kyle Clifford, Derek Forbert, and Alec Martinez is a guy who could be moved. Oh, Kyle Palmieri, too, for the Devils. I forgot, who they don't have to trade. He has 1 year left at 4.6, but if someone comes calling with a good offer, they should be looking at the forest, not the trees. And then Alec Martinez, same kind of thing with the King. I know they don't have to trade him, but a lot can happen between now and next year, and it's clear where these two franchises going. They're more about, you know, 2-3 years from now than next season. So if there's a really good offer on the table for those two players in terms of future assets, Palmieri and Alec Martinez, if I was a Devils or Kings fan, I would want my general manager to pull the trigger on them.
Yeah, for sure. They're both going to be in stockpiling mode and cap management as they try and move on from some of these, I'm speaking Kings directly, some of these players that went through the wars, and they're going to be trying to move on from the Trevor Lewis, Kyle Clifford type player to still trying to build more speed and skill into that roster for today's National Hockey League. Amart obviously will always be a Kings legend for the overtime game winners in the Western Conference Final and the overtime cup clinching goal. in that 2014 Stanley Cup run. But yeah, the writing's on the wall. These players are all going to be on the block. And I think Trevor Lewis would be a dark horse candidate if somebody just wants depth. He could play at the center position and play the third or fourth line center with that Cup experience.
He'd be good guy for the Isles if they can't get a Peugeot, like as a fullback kind of guy at a much lesser cost.
For sure.
So probably talking about like a third round pick there, yeah. You know? Maybe third round pick in a second tier prospect.
Yeah, for sure. I could see that fit, especially with Trotz's system. I think Lewis would do a very good job in with New York.
But it's not an overwhelming. Last year we had Duchesne and Stone and
would
Columbus trade Panarin and those kind of things. It's not
that year
compared to that.
You know,
like I said. Kreider could really help somebody, and he's clearly, I mean, Peugeot, even though he has really good offensive statistics this year, not that he's bad offensively, but I think he's really a secondary offensive player. He's a sum greater than sum of the whole of its parts, if you will, and also at the center position. But you know, I look at Kreider, Peugeot, and Vatanen as the, you know, primo pieces of this deadline. And then the question then comes up, you know, what does Jersey move forward with Palmieri, and does the Kings move forward now with Martinez too? So, but those to me are the, and then after that, we're looking at really support players.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's fair. It's definitely nowhere near last year's class at the deadline. There's not, it's just a function of who's in it and who's out it and who still has term left on their contract and who's going to be wanting to dump expiring contracts. And excuse me, what the cost of those expiring contracts are going to be. Still, we'll be keeping our eye on it. That should wrap it up for this week. Chris, you got anything else, buddy?
No, the last point we want to make is we'll be curious to see is, you know, does that mean the teams that wind up landing a Vatanen, a Peugeot, or Kreider, are you going to have to pay more? Because, you know, there's going to be a lot of teams interested in them. None of those players have big cap numbers to deal with. There's not going to be a cap issue. So, like, let's say all things being equal, we've talked about this in the past, that the real market value to rent Semi Vatanen should be, let's call it a second-round pick and then another secondary asset, not as good. Let's say in 2021, a third-round pick or a B-plus level or B-level prospect. Well, you know, after Vatanen, who's the next best defenseman? Because of that, I'm not saying you're going to have to give up a blue-chip prospect or, dare I say, a first-round pick for these guys, but, you know, you're going to have to outbid these other teams. That would be interesting to see that where the teams that wind up landing these players, will there have to be a bit of overpayment just truly based on supply and demand?
Yeah, you know, teams go crazy at the trade deadline in general, and it does seem like a lot of times that when the market is thinner, the insanity gets bigger. Because everyone's going to be desperate to add that one piece that they think is going to take them either into the playoffs, you know, put them over the edge and make them a playoff team, or the difference between being a deep run in the playoffs and a first round exit. So as, you know, the market gets thinner, the price tag usually goes up, and, you know, we know these general managers can't help themselves. There's been any number of trade deadline deals that are just ridiculous. So that's also something that's pretty interesting.
And that's more of an argument for the Kings to trade Martinez, even though he's still got 1 year on his contract after this, and for the Devils to trade Palmieri for the same reason.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. All right, I think that's going to wrap us up for this week, yep. Chris. You got a, you said you got a new article coming out. That's Ion Isles FS.
On Monday. On Monday, I finally was able to get my second article in January out. I got one out right after New Year's, and things have been so hectic and busy. And thank goodness, I have great understanding editors, and I'll have a new one out come Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern.
All right, we'll be sure to pop that link up on the at Vegas Hockey Pod on Twitter. Everybody, make sure you go to the hockeypodcastnetwork.com and check out their great lineup of hockey podcasts. They got one from every team in the National Hockey League. So far, I've listened to one show from each guest, and they're all pretty one show from each team. And I haven't had a bad episode yet. So make sure everyone goes over and checks out everything that the guys are doing at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com, because there's a lot of good stuff there. That's going to wrap us up for this week. We're going to see what we can do Wednesday, and then next Saturday we'll be back again. Same bad time, same bad channel. So for Chris, I'm Mark, we're gone.